Well, hi, this is Nicole Brandon from Unlimited Life, and thank you so much for joining us today. It's such a joy and such a pleasure always to have so many people here on such a beautiful Saturday afternoon. So this is a new show, and we have such an exciting lineup for you. It's, for me, for years and years and years and years, I've been interviewed on other people's shows, and very often when I'm asked to come onto other people's shows, I really don't have the opportunity to talk about what I would love to talk about really what an unlimited life is. What does that look like? And for a while I was working on a television show, I believe I told you, called New Earth News, which was the people, the places, the resources, and events that were transforming the planet as well as Strange Universe, which was a paranormal show. And so I've had the opportunity across the globe to meet so many extraordinary people, and now I actually have an opportunity to bring them all to you, so I'm really thrilled about that. And so the shows that we have coming up, I just want to tell you, because we have such an amazing lineup for this month. So we have Peter Padgett. I don't know if you remember Peter Padgett. He was became very famous for the Welsh Triangle book that he wrote, and he is a UFO specialist. And as far as I know, I have known Peter now for years, he is the most versed being on UFOlogy, what he knows about the supernatural, the paranormal, other beings, other planets, other worlds, and their interaction with us here is just really riveting and phenomenal. He moved to Brazil for a while. He is now living in England. And Peter and I have actually talked to him. He may come on and co-host many of these shows with me, especially as we have our extraordinary guest in the UFO and the supernatural world. Peter would come on from England, and that is why we actually chose this particular time for the show, so he is capable of doing that. So we really have that to look forward to. So if you just keep posting, he may be here as early as next week, which would be so phenomenal. And so just look it up on Unlimited Life, and we'll tell you all about when Peter's jumping, but if he's here next week, what a great way to start our summer. Just amazing. But we do have Peter as part of the show. Also, John Paul Forrestal, and John Paul is also in England. And John Paul is known as the walking Wikipedia. He's one of the people that started the BBC, was the chief editor for the London Times. He's written many television shows, many movies, many screenplays, wrote things for like National Geographic and Discovery Magazine, and there is really nothing that you can't ask him. He truly is the walking Wikipedia as a man. Any subject, and sometimes I just test it, sometimes I'll lean back and I'll pick a subject, Eskimos, or I'll pick a subject, whatever it is, and just see what he comes up with, and then he'll just talk for hours. And so I'm thrilled to bring him on the show, because subjects that you've been curious about your whole life, where their origins, where they come from, how they work, really what the true facts are about any situation in our history and history of other countries of the world, even in space, other planets, he actually has all this information. You can just ask, and this wealth of information just pours out of him. We actually could do shows for months and months and months and have him as the only guest, and you would just be absolutely amazed and floored each time. So we do have John Forrestal, who will be joining us from London. Then we have Nick Bear. I was telling you about Nick Bear last week. Nick Bear, I met at the CEO Space Conference in Las Vegas, and Nick is a soul whisperer. He actually can tell the calling of your heart, and that would be so much fun, because you can call in and he'll talk to you all about what's going on inside, your blueprint, what you came here to do. So we have Nick coming forward. Then we have Alan Robinson, and Alan Robinson is a stuntman extraordinaire. Alan Robinson, if you love lots of James Bond, the 007, people jumping off buildings, high-speed car crashes, trains, flames, things catching on fire, people, not only is he an international stuntman all over the world as he worked, but he is also one of the top stunt coordinators in our time today. So movies that you see that are action adventure movies, he's stunt coordinated, and he's the one that creates and thinks of all these ideas and brings all of these stunt people together to create the magic you see on screen. So that's going to be an exciting show. Then we have Ben Newman, and Ben is a personal dear friend of mine. Ben Newman is the millionaire mentor. And Ben started out, he moved here from Germany. He didn't know a single person here. He actually had his wife go down to the 7-Eleven to call him, because they didn't know anybody in the state of California or in America, just to see that their phone worked. And within a few short years, he just started at the very top of the dot-com business. He became a multi-billionaire, bought and sold companies over and over again, decided, gosh, I wonder if I could do something else other than the dot-com business, and opened a restaurant. Within 3 months, the restaurant became LA's most romantic restaurant. That was a restaurant called Europa. And after making millions and millions and billions of dollars, I know he got bored with it, and imagine getting bored with making that kind of money. And what he decided to do was he wondered if he could mentor young kids, find 18, 19-year-old kids, see if he can't find them, see what their dream is, and mentor them to becoming millionaires. And he became so good at mentoring young people into becoming millionaires, he started a program called the Millionaire Mentor Program. And you actually give him some money to make you a millionaire, and you work with him for a year. And if you don't become a millionaire in a year, he gives you your money back. Because if you do what he says, it's easy for you to become a millionaire. He actually has the golden keys and the touch for you, for your finances, for your dreams to be financed, and an entrepreneurial spirit like you couldn't believe. He had an incredible childhood. We talk about, you know, bullying, abuse. We talked about all sorts of things on, you know, the show and on Curious Times. And you will see a man that came from nothing and built himself into one of the greatest icons of our time today. And he's going to tell you how to do that. And if he can do it, anybody can do it. So that should be such an extraordinary show. And then we have Brooks Cole coming on. And Brooks Cole is Holocosmos. And that's the coolest technology on the planet. That is a technology that you see where you actually just wave your hands around and whatever it is on the computer screen, it moves. You can turn pages, you can create objects, and it's the newest, latest, greatest technology. He's going to tell you how it works, how you can get it, the future of technology and computers as we know it, and what it's going to look like. We are going to live in the George Jetson era, and he's going to tell you all about that. And then we have Anne Hafton, and Anne Hafton is calling in from Israel, and she is one of the top feng shui people on the planet, and she is extraordinary. And you'll be able to call in, ask her questions about your own success, your love life, your finances, your career, how to move things around in your house. And she really, you know, they say she wrote a book on it. Not only has she written a book on it, she's written a book in so many languages. So she is really a top feng shui expert. We're honored and blessed that she's going to be joining our call. And then we have Ian Wynn, which I'm very excited. We just got Ian Wynn to say yes, that he would come on to our show, and he has the Superhuman Project. And so that is our lineup, which is just going to be amazing. And so as I sit down and I look at the shows that we have lined out for you, I just know it's so extraordinary and so great that you're going to be able to join us, and that I'm going to be able to interview people and bring to you some of the greatest, latest information that I really know is on the cutting edge. And that for me is so special. And so before we begin our shows and our lineups, we decided today just to sort of take today as a solitary day, because there's so many things that people ask me about, and I realized when I was on Curious Times that I really don't have the opportunity to share with people some of my extraordinary. And I have lived such an incredibly magical life. And we've talked about, you know, other shows, and we've talked about certainly in my writing, the fact that I have an unlimited body, that I've led an unlimited life, some of the things that I've had the opportunities to do and to be, and I really feel like I'm on a magic carpet ride. We also have talked about the fact that I've seen spirits ever since I was born. And I didn't know that other people didn't, and that work has led me to work as a shaman in many different countries. And so as I sat around, I was at a party the other night, and we were talking about the fact that I've done all the shamanic work, the fact that I was in the White House teaching that you go into condo prophecies, the fact that I was at the United Nations working with the healing of the sacred hoop, that I worked with the Earth Guardians, the fact that I've been in all these countries and that different languages have flowed through my lips, and that I absolutely knew all these ceremonies from the time past, and how that works and what my journey has been. And so I'm going to answer some of those questions for you today. If you have any questions, please feel free to call in, because you might have in your own time, in your own life, special extraordinary gifts, and you've always felt a little bit different, or you've always known that you have this ability and other people don't, and you didn't know who to talk to about it, or how to talk to somebody about it. It's really funny. One of my friends is an extraordinary medium, and she's incredibly gifted, and it's a spiritual venue, and she really is just an instrument of the light. And she was saying that you're either schizophrenic or you're awake. Because when you see things and you see beings and you see light and you see energy, that you can say to people, oh, there are all these 12-foot beings that are in my house and they really, you know, like this one thing in my house or whatever. Or, you know, somebody thinks you're crazy or they think you're awake and you can see. And I never thought anything other than the fact that I could see. When, you know, you're little and you talk about fairies and you talk about angels and you talk about little people. And then when I got older, I actually taught a class to children and I would teach them how fairies and angels and leprechauns and little people, that they're like aunts and uncles and cousins, and the hierarchy of the structure of that. And so when I was a child, I was always able to see. I always knew when somebody was going to pass over. It was just an innate instinct. I would meet somebody and I would give them a hug, and I would tell my mom they were going to be gone and we wouldn't see them anymore. I just always knew that people were going to go. I would have a sixth sense, if that's what you would call it. But at the same time, I always had a connection with the earth. And I remember when we were in a little gardening class. I was maybe in second or third grade, and they were picking up, you know, the earth, and they were saying, okay, so this is dirt, and, you know, you put the dirt around the seeds and around the plant. And I found that so odd that they were calling it dirt. And then I picked up the soil in one hand, and I picked up the soil in my other hand, and in my right hand I looked at it, and I thought, some people call it dirt. And then in my other hand, I thought, some people call it earth. And when it's earth, flowers grow and plants grow, and there's life. And that if we always look at things as if it's earth, as everything that we look at in our life, we look for the growth, for the magic, for all the essence that's inside that, and not look at something as if it's dirty, not look at something as if it's something that we're throwing away or washing off or not wanting to be part of us or not pure or not perfect in any way. And so that was just always what I knew and always what I saw. And then I was always connected to the center of the earth, and I was always connected to the universe. And it's funny because I won cartwheeling contests when I was a kid. And if you listen to, you know, some of the radio shows on Wake Up Women or on Curious Times, as you know, I was award-winning as a dancer and an acrobat. But as a child, I did cartwheels like crazy. You could not, I would cartwheel down the aisles in the supermarket. I could win cartwheeling contests. I would do hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cartwheels. And so what I finally realized as I was cartwheeling is that that was my way of connecting with the earth and connecting with the sky, and connecting with the earth and connecting with the sky. And so it seemed for me the most natural instinct in the world is to have those connections, to have that freedom, to have that joy. And as a child, I always had this unlimited essence and sense in my body. And I was trained. I would have spirits that would come in and they would train me and they would teach me medicine, sacred medicine of the plants, of the sky. They would teach me all about life and the essence of life and other planets and the war of the planets. And I had so much information that was being poured into me. And then in 1995, I became really blessed and I was invited to a ceremony, and it was called the Eagle and Condor Prophecy Ceremony. It was the very first time with the indigenous people that the North and the South had met. And I was the only American in that ceremony, and I was the only white person in that ceremony, and I was the only woman in that ceremony. And one of the Hopi leaders looked at me, and he had tears in his eyes, and he said, "We've waited so long for your return." And on those few days that I was there at the incredible ceremony of the Eagle and the Condor and the coming together of the North and the South and the spirit and the technological minds and all of that, I had one of the Lakota medicine men work with me. And he taught me bear energy and he taught me plant energy. And he took me on these journeys into other worlds, into other selves. And I never knew the why I was chosen for such an extraordinary journey. I just knew that I was being given information that at some point a bell would ring on this planet and that I would have this information and I would be called upon as a healer, as a shaman, as a light being, as a spirit, to be able to help people do all these things. And so from that time, the windows and doors almost of the rainbow and sky opened up to me. And I went down to Mexico, and I worked with many of the Mayans. And I slept even in Chichen Itzan, areas that are now roped off. I actually slept on the sacred sites, and I worked with some of the, you know, the greatest Mayan leaders and greatest Mayan teachers, and they would teach me sacred geometry, and they teach me the energy of the past and the energy of the sky and the energy of the stars. And again, I was schooled, and at that time I wasn't doing anything with the information. I was just an open vessel and vehicle of learning, and so all of that information was poured into me. And then from that point, then I went and I got the opportunity to stay on the Crow Reservation for a while in Montana, and I had an opportunity to learn from them, and that was just amazing. And I remember at one point there were horses, and I had asked if the horses were wild and if I could ride them, and they said yes, that the horses were wild, and they had a feeling these horses would just lay down for me. And it was like a cartoon. I remember trying to ride the horse, and I would run, and I would jump, and I'd run, and I'd jump, and I couldn't get up because the horses were just too high. And then finally, one horse actually did lay down, and I climbed right on its back, and we started to ride. And one of the medicine men from the Crow said, Nicole, and I said, yes, and I turned around. He said, now when you see a bear, this is what you do. And it was one of my favorite things that somebody has ever said to me, because he didn't say, if you see a bear. He said, when you see a bear, this is what you do. And I'm one with you. You know why I'm here. He taught me a chant. And then, of course, I was riding through bear country in Montana. And as I was riding through bear country, we went for hours and hours and hours into this hot sun. And at one point, I remember thinking, it's getting late and it's getting dark. And I had no idea where we started. I didn't know where the reservation was, and I hoped that the horse knew where we began. And also, we were riding through bear country, and so it was very dangerous, and it was getting very, very, very dark. But the bear did get us home safely, and I remember thinking, wow, that's what it feels like to be one with all things. And all these lessons were coming into me. And then I was asked to speak at the White House and to teach the Eagle Condor prophecies at the White House. And I remember as I was going in, the guard had grabbed me and he turned me to face him, and he opened his shirt and he had a medicine bag under his shirt, and he let me know that he was there and that spirit was there in the White House. It was such an extraordinary experience for me, and one that I still hold to the day, to know that in our governmental system, even though to us it looks chaotic, there are those that are in there that are spirit and holy and of integrity and of honor and of light, and they're there as beams of light and as pillars to hold us together. And so it really is such a comforting thought. And then I had the opportunity to work with the children in Hawaii, Earth Guardians. And the little Earth Guardians were children from around the world. Different children were chosen every year, and I think the children were like 6 to 12 or 6 to 14. And they would travel the globe, and they would have a couple of adults that would go with them as chaperones, and the rest of the children just went around the globe, and they would talk to other children around the planet. And then at the end of the year, they'd come back to the White House, and they'd come back to the UN, and the children would speak. The little Earth Guardian children would speak, and they would say, the children of the world think you should do this about the ozone. The children of the world think you should do this about the depletion of our trees. The children of the world think you should do this about the animals that are becoming extinct. The children, and it was the most incredibly profound, profound vision, experience, energy that I have ever felt, to have these children be the voice of the planet and the voice of the world. And I had the divine opportunity to lead these children in the parade around the White House and a ceremony, which was the healing of the sacred hoop of all the indigenous leaders coming together, trying to close that circle and make peace. And so for years and years, this had been my existence in my life. And I never knew the next step. I never knew the unfolding. I never knew what it meant as I was busy doing my life and acting and writing and dancing and doing acrobatics and speaking and teaching. And it was just in me. It was part of me. It wasn't anything I could describe. It wasn't really anything I could share. It wasn't really anything other than the fact that I saw and I knew and I could see energy and spirit all the time. I walk into a room and I always think, wow, it's so crowded. Look at all these people that are here. But they were all beings and all energy and all light. It was always just fun for me. And then 2001, I was in a tremendous car accident, which if you research me, today's show is not about my accident, but my world was blown apart on August 10, 2001. And my life just sort of hit a pause, just literally like you put a button and my life was paused. And I remember seeing a show called Caesar and Ruben, and Caesar and Ruben was about Caesar Chavez and Ruben Salazar. And in the show, they meet in a way station in heaven. And in the way station in heaven, Caesar Chavez doesn't know that he's dead. And Ruben Salazar, who was just amazing as a writer at that time and a journalist, is trying to share with Cesar Chavez all the good that he did for people. And Cesar Chavez loved music. And so there's a jukebox at this way station in heaven. And when Cesar Chavez would say that he wants to see, you know, one memory of his wife, Ruben Salazar would go to the jukebox and he would hit C1. And since Cesar Chavez wanted to see one memory, he'd hit C1, and all of a sudden the scene would play. Or if he wanted to know what happened before he died on the jukebox, he would hit the B4. And all of a sudden, music would start in the jukebox, and the scene would take you back to the time in life. And it's a beautiful show if you ever have an opportunity to see it. But my life was like that. All of a sudden, my life was like somebody hit a button. And all of a sudden, music would play, and I was in a different time and a different scene in my life. And that scene came to a time where I was putting my body back together again. And I had made 3 deals with the universe that if I could put my body back together again, one, that I would never have a day go by in my life. I didn't teach people what I knew about the body and its unlimited potential. And we'll talk a little bit about that today. And the second was that I was willing to go through whatever pain was necessary to get people get out of pain. And third was I was with a man at that time who didn't know that I would get well. And so the third was that I would never be with a man who didn't know who I was and actually see and understand the gifts that I was given. And a year from the time of the accident, I climbed the Great Wall of China and I went to work with the Chinese acrobats as a contortionist. And so my life took a whole different path in 2001 than it had before. And before this accident, I would marionette myself. I would be on the balance beam, and almost like a puppeteer. I would watch myself dance, make love, whatever it was. I was never here. I was always above, just watching my life, saying, oh, what a great life I'm doing, or that was a beautiful dance, or that was amazing acrobatic tricks. But I wasn't on the inside. Once I had the accident happen to me, it actually put me in my body, and I learned how to move my body from a different space. And that was 2001, and by 2005, I had become a master instructor. I had become the only American physical master in the entire world, and the youngest master teacher, you know, in the United States and internationally. And so it really changed my life. It allowed me to create programs, pediatric pain programs, Parkinson's Foundation programs, Special Olympics programs for people who've had heart attacks and strokes and arthritis. I mean, and I went ahead and I've created extraordinary avenues for people to live an unlimited life in physical form. But what I didn't realize was that I was still being trained as a shaman, that spirit was still talking to me. I had thought that that part of my life had shut down. I had that thought that that part of my life went away as I was putting so much energy and effort and time into healing myself and into healing others, that I didn't see. I wasn't looking for the magic, for the miracles, for the light, for the spirit. I was just so determined to help others know the unlimited potential of who they were. And then In 2005, I became part of an amazing organization, and part of what the work that they were doing was working with the rainforest in Ecuador. And I remember I was so excited to be able to be in Ecuador and also to be in Peru and to be able to help these countries. And what happened was, before I went, as soon as I made a decision to go over there, I started getting all my messages again. It was almost like a replay of my whole childhood, where I actually went through 4 or 5 months of my life. And let me be clear on that. I actually went through 4 or 5 months of my life. That's months, not weeks, not days, not hours, but months of my life when there was no darkness whatsoever. I could shut every light in my house. I could go into a closet. I can go out into the nighttime in an alley. I could close my eyes, I could put a blindfold on, and all I saw was light. All I saw for months on end was light, and then one day everything went back to what we understand to be normal, and then I see light and dark and shadows and moving up, everything that everybody sees now. But for months, every time I would close my eyes, every time I would shut the lights, it didn't matter that I shut the lights even though I knew it was dark to other people. To me, all I could see was light. It was just like being out in the afternoon and the day, just beautiful, bright sunshine and light all the time. And then I was given messages. And as I was being given messages, one of my friends, who's written a lot of books on shape-shifting, came to me and said, Nicole, you really need to train because they're waiting for you. And you have to understand tradition. You know, there's certain things, because there isn't anybody that's in these rainforests, there isn't any being, there isn't any energy, there isn't any light that's going to see you the way that you're seen here. People are not going to see you as American. They're not going to see you as a woman. They're only going to see energy. And so you have to understand how to negotiate and navigate that energy and how to become part of it. And so before I went over there, I remember that I cried for a couple weeks, and I couldn't stop crying. And I remember, it's funny as I think about this today, because when we talked about my accident, that I had said that I cried endlessly at the accident, and that when I look back, I can't tell you how long I cried, if I cried for hours or days. It just seemed like I couldn't stop crying when I had the accident. And then, I meet people who have lost a spouse or whatever, and they'll say that they got all cried out. And I don't remember getting all cried out when I had the accident. I just remember crying. It just seemed like, and I was crying like a little child where you gasp your breath and you can't stop crying. And that's what it felt like when I had my accident. And then I had that vision or memory of when I was 4 years old. And I had spilled something in the kitchen, and my mom came in, and she picked me up, and she was cradling me, and she said, honey, why are you crying? Why are you crying? You know, that it's just an accident. It's just an accident. We just have to clean up the mess. And it was that very vision, that very memory of my mom saying, honey, why are you crying? Why are you crying? It's just an accident. It's just an accident. We just have to clean up the mess. That let me say, okay, how? And make my deal with the universe. If I could put myself back together again, the Wednesday data went by that it didn't teach people what I knew about the unlimited potential of the body. And that's when a year later my life had changed. And here I was at the very same kind of juncture where I was headed off to Ecuador. And my body just started to even sob and cry. And I was crying and crying and crying and crying in the very same way that I could not stop the tears. Cannot tell you why I was crying or what I was crying at. It wasn't like I was in pain. It's just my body kept sobbing. But what I knew in those cries, what I knew for certain was that my life as I knew it was now over. There was no going back. That anything I knew up to that point and up to that time was forever changed, was forever different. That once I went to Ecuador, that the me I knew would no longer exist. and the me I was supposed to become would be born. And I didn't know if when I came back I would be able to see my family and my friends and with them then. I just knew that my life was over as I knew it. And then when I went over there, there was such a sense, and it's interesting because when I travel, and even now I'm looking to move part of the year to the south of France and be in the States, and part of the year I feel very home in the south of France, and so I know that I have a connection there, and it's also Close Encounters where spirits come in. So there's a great opening that I'm to assist with. And I also want to create like a Harry Potter school over there too for children to stay in the magic and all of that. So if you are interested in helping me create that Harry Potter school, not a Harry Potter school, but one for letting children tame the magic and show them how to do that and enhance their magic, then certainly please contact me. But every country that I go to, I feel a part of. Every land, I never feel that I'm American. I always feel that if I'm in Italy, I'm Italian. If I'm in Germany, I'm German. If I'm in France, I'm French. If I'm in the Netherlands, that wherever I go seems like home to me. I never feel like I'm on vacation. I never feel like people are different or that the culture is different or the language is different. I just land and it's home. The only difference is being in the plane or being in the land. But wherever I land, it is just as much home as if I'm here going to the dry cleaners. It's just, there is no differential for me in any country. But I remember when I landed in Ecuador, it was different. It was almost as if I felt like I fell to the center of the earth. I felt like there was this big hole, like almost like Alice in Wonderland, where you go down and all of a sudden you go through the rabbit hole and now you're in this whole other enchanted world. And that's really what it felt like for me, that everything, the sounds, the sights, colors that I didn't even know existed, sounds. We have, if you think about a bird there and, you know, in your house in a gilded cage and the bird is tapping away at a salt tablet. And that's what birds do. If you have a bird in your cage in your house, you would give it a little salt. And they have entire walls that are salt walls. On any given day in the rainforest, over 2,000 species of birds end up feeding off these salt tablets. So if you can imagine what it sounds like to hear 2,000 species of birds sing at the very same time. There's absolutely no sound like the sound of the rainforest, from the wildlife to the rain to the kaboom of the thunder that just sounds like earth and your soul is split in half, to the awakening of the day. It's there. It's the most magical. It's like Jungle Book 1,000 times over in a way that you can't even imagine. There's nothing possible in our consciousness that could prepare us for that kind of beauty, that kind of graciousness, that kind of glory is what you hear there. And when I was there, I was told that I would end up working with the women. And I didn't know what that meant. And they told me that their dream community and that the women would be able to communicate with me. And as I journeyed through Ecuador, it took me a couple weeks before I actually got down to the rainforest. And I went to places that were closest to the sun on the planet, being on the equator. I became friends with baby llama. I actually woke up, there was baby llama outside my door. I have got to experience joy in a way. I've never, people that share that have nothing, that share everything that they have. But once I was in the rainforest, I had a calling. And I was with a group of people, and I knew that I was to go off and to work with the women. I knew that I was given a mission from the planet and from the universe. And I was told quite quickly, well, Nicole, we can't do that. We can't separate you from the group. It's impossible. And again, I started to cry. And I said, this is not a choice. This is not a choice. This is a calling. And if I'm meant to do what I think I'm meant to do, they're expecting me. And they'll figure it out. And then as I journeyed further and further into the rainforest, I went to a village, and how we even got to that village is a story in itself. I was dropped by a military jet in the middle of clearing of trees. I was taken literally, you know, by one of the natives who led me through a rainforest with alligators and monkeys and pink dolphins. And I mean, truly, it was like the most enchanted journey to get there. And then in this village, they didn't know they were Ecuadorian. They didn't know they lived in a country. These are beings that live just in the space and place. They live in a rainforest. That is all they know, is their world and their life there. They communicate through their dreams. They sleep on banana leaves. There are no walls. There are no ceilings. There are no floors. They forage for food. It is the most breathless, priceless, incredible experience you could ever imagine. And as I was there, we would go around in a circle and we would share who we were, why we were there. And then that was translated into Spanish, and that was translated into the language of the native people there. And then that was translated to the shaman. And so somebody would say, "Hi, I'm Jim, and I'm from London, and I'm here to help you build hospitals," or whatever that is, "or medical treatment here so you don't have as many babies that are not making it," or whatever it is, "or I'm here to help stop the oil people," or whatever it was that people would say. And they would say that in English, and it would be translated into Spanish, and it would be translated into the native language, and it would be translated to the shaman, and it would go back. And I got up and I said, "Hi, I'm Nicole, and I'm not of this world. I'm from a place and space far, far away. And I had a vision of being here. And thank you for the call." And they said, "Nicole is from California." And I couldn't believe that that was actually the translation of what I just said. And I thought, what just happened? And I just trusted the universe. And as we spent hours and hours and hours and hours in ceremony, just sitting on the floor, because there aren't even boxes for you to sit on. You know, you just sit on the muddy ground. And we did this amazing ceremony. And then after the ceremony, I was moved to get up and to do some of my aerials and contortion things that I do. And I got up and I had on my pants and these rubber boots to my thigh and a jacket with all the pockets. I looked like I just came out of some safari magazine, and a hat with a fishing net and all of these things. And as I'm doing my acrobatics and contortion, and I'm rolling around in the mud, I literally looked like a pig. Every single little piece of me was covered in black mud as I was doing this. And the shaman looked at me like one of those retriever puppy people with his head tilted, and he never saw anything like that. And when I got up, I couldn't believe I was able to do it. I couldn't believe that wearing all this gear, 40, 50 pounds of gear that I was wearing in black mud, I was able to do no-handed flips and aerials and fly in front of these people and do contortion stuff and show them that the body has no limitations and stoppage whatsoever. And when I got up, the shaman spoke, and that went back to the village people, and that went back to Spanish, and that went back to English. And they said they want you to do it again because the people in the village did not have an opportunity to see it. And I didn't know I could do it the first time. And so they went and they got the villagers, and they brought back these people from the village. And again, I rolled around in the mud and did all these no-handed flips and did these things for these beautiful, beautiful, beautiful beings of light in front of me. And then when they finished, I sat and my hair was matted in mud and my face was full of mud and my whole body. And it just looked like, you know, one of these cartoons or one of these movies where people get lost on an island. And that's, you know, I think we even saw them in the Blue Lagoon where they come out and they're all muddy and they think they're natives. That's what I look like. And then we went back to our ceremony. And at the completion of the ceremony, the shaman spoke. And when he spoke, after it came back in the five-way translation, they let me know that the women would indeed meet with me as the sun went down. And I remember that feeling inside that I couldn't believe that they knew who I was. And again, there was a man with just his face painted and a machete to cut through the rainforest so I could take the next step forward, and a translator who led me through these fields and through the thick of the rainforest. And I walked for hours, and I remember that there were yellow jacks and there were bees and all these things buzzing around me. And normally when I would be afraid, I wasn't afraid at all. It was the most natural thing for me to be walking through this rainforest. And finally, we stopped in a clearing. And I don't know why that spot. I have a friend of mine, Raymond Aaron, and Raymond Aaron actually climbed all the way to the North Pole with the dog sleds. He's one of the few people who have ever reached the North Pole. And I remember when he said he got there, why this spot and not the other spot? Why not 5 hours ago or 5 days ago or that spot that's actually the top of the North Pole looks like all these other spots? And so why this particular spot and this particular clearing and this particular area of the rainforest? But he just stopped and he asked me to sit. And I sat down and yellow jacks and bees were buzzing around my head. And he made this high-pitched sound, and it's a cross between a whistle and a cry. And it's still a sound I could hear in my head, but there's no way to really describe it to you, except that it was a sound almost like the veil of the universe had opened. That's the best way to describe it. And when he made this sound, all of a sudden, as far as eyes could see, women came out from behind trees, women everywhere, and it was like in some sci-fi movie. There were all these women, all these children, and all these women were carrying babies, and they all came towards me, and they thought I was a god. They thought that I had fallen from the sky. They never saw anything like that, and so they were so afraid of me and so afraid to look me in the eye, and I kept trying to let them know it was okay. And then finally he said, now begin. And I didn't even know what to say. And he explained to them that I was a shaman. And he asked me what it was that I did. And I explained that I am the bridge between the physical and the spiritual world, and that whatever is in body, I could bring into spirit, and what's ever in spirit, I could bring into human form. And then he asked me if I worked with women that were infertile, and I said I did. And he asked me if I could work with babies that couldn't walk, and I said I did. And the next thing I knew, I had a line of people I was working with. And as I worked with these women and these children, one after one, after one, after one, after one, there was still this huge line of people to work with. And finally they told me I had to go back for an evening ceremony, and I could not leave these people that were there to be healed and were there to work with me. And they told me I had to go back. And then I said that I needed to come back in the morning to work with more people. And they told me I could not do that because I was needed in another village in the morning. And I really didn't know what to do. So what I did was I formed a sacred circle. And I did a group healing on everybody. And I explained to them that I can see their visions. I can see their pain. I can see their trauma. I can see their glory. I can see their life. I can see. But what I wanted to know is how they could see, how I could send back messages, because I didn't need to be there to help heal them. But I did need to know how to send the messages so they could receive them. And it was such an incredible feeling for me. And then I went back to the village and we did a sacred ceremony. And then in the morning, as the shaman spoke, I was telling him that I, in my dream state that night, or my wake state, or whatever you want to grant it as, that I had dreams of all these different animals. And I told him the animals that I had dreams of, and some of them were animals I never even knew existed, but I knew what they looked like in my dreams. And also different languages. And I was telling him all the different languages. And at that time, all this, just all these prayers, all these blessings, all these words, all these songs, like other native languages and tongues were just flowing out of me. Like I had learned 17 languages in a night of native languages. And he was very silent for a very long time. And he told me that I was a great shaman. And they had been waiting a very long time for me. And he explained to me his journey as a shaman, that when he was a shaman, he would go work with other shaman, other villages, and that he would learn the medicine of the plants or the medicine of the sky, or then that he invited me to live amongst them to learn the sacred medicine with them. And it was really an incredible experience. And when I was leaving, they asked that when I came back, or another shaman like me, if we would let them know in advance, because many wanted to work with me that did not have an opportunity. And then that night, when we were back in a village, we had taken a boat to leave there, and the most sensual, most beautiful, most comforting, most riveting, most powerful boat ride of my life, as we floated down this river with the pink dolphins along our side and these huge, huge, huge thunder and lightning storms that you just felt like, you know, Noah's Ark, that you're going to be washed to another universe. And then when I got back to the village that I was staying in that evening, after being in this village several days, one of the people from the Ecuadorian government came to me and said, Nicole, you need to learn Spanish fast because they're waiting for you. They're waiting for you. And then while we were there, we had the opportunity to work with two of the shaman, one with the fire ceremony, which is just so beautiful, where actually you're purified through fire and through light. And then the other, there's a purification through roses and carnations and flowers and love. And those of us that wanted to had an opportunity to work with either of these shaman and do a healing ceremony. And I had made a decision once in advance that I wanted to do the fire ceremony, that I knew what that would mean to be blessed and purified by fire and light. And I actually had the opportunity to see a ceremony such as that. John Perkins did a ceremony, and he wrote the book The Shapeshifters and Economic Hitman, and he presented a ceremony, and I just thought it was the most beautiful, beautiful, powerful, incredible thing I ever saw, and that's what I wanted to experience. And so when we went to the ceremony, they said that if you were being blessed by the fire, as they passed around candles, to please take a candle, they would know that you were doing the fire ceremony. And when they got to me with a box of candles, I said, no, I'm okay. I'm fine, thanks. And I could not believe it came out of my mouth, because I had waited months to do this ceremony. And I thought, how did it come out of my mouth? And then I thought, well, maybe because I just came from the rainforest, that I am pure right now and that I don't need the ceremony. But I was so surprised by it. And then the shaman came in to perform the ceremony, and he was with his brothers and his sons and a translator, and he came over to me and he shook my hand and he asked me, he told me, and you help. And he handed me the fire. And instead of receiving the healing from the shaman, I participated and performed the ceremony with him as a shaman. And as we were doing the ceremony on these people that had come to be healed by the light and the energy and the fire and the warmth, the purity of it all, I knew the ceremony. I knew the ceremony from beginning to end, as if I had done it hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of times in my life. I knew the prayers, I knew the blessings, I knew the songs, I knew the order, I knew the words, I knew the language. It just literally just poured out of me. And I stood there as a shaman in this country with this information as this vessel and vehicle of channeling pure light and energy to these people. And afterwards, we were leaving and they asked me to come back. And again, they had told me here in now another village in another area of Ecuador that I was a powerful shaman. And they invited me to come live with them for 5 months and to learn from them and to be a part of their world and their life, and they let me know how honored and blessed they were on this given day that I had graced their village with my presence. And I remember leaving, and that night I was just crying again because I could not believe that this is my life. I could not believe that this is inside of me. How is it inside of me? Where is it inside of me? When was it put in there? When was it poured? what am I meant to do with this information now that I know that I'm a shaman, now that I know that I can heal people in other languages and other worlds, and that I know ceremonies that I didn't even know I knew, and just so impeccably, and just as if I've been doing it through centuries. And then a couple of days later, we went to see the last shaman we were to see there. And this one was flowers and roses and light. And so I thought, well, how nice. If that's the way that I end my journey here to Ecuador, then that would just be beautiful, that I have the opportunity to be blessed and healed by light and carnations and joy and the essence of all that's good and sweet on the planet. And this is very different because the people greeting us were all little kids wearing beautiful dresses that looked like Sunday school or Easter. And they gave you flower necklaces and roses and punches, like being at the most perfect little party you could imagine. And as we went in, the shaman would greet people, and they would just greet her, and they would slowly go into the room. And the room was just gorgeous, sort of like being at a garden party. And when I came up to the shaman to enter the room, she looked at me, and she started to cry. And she said, Nicole. And I said, yes. And she said, Nicole. And I said, yes. And she said, Nicole. And I said, yes. And then she finally was weeping, and she said, we're here. You're here. And she started kissing me with these little guppy kisses on my lips, like, mm-hmm. She's giving me little kisses. And she grabbed me, and she slowly raced me into the room and put me in her chair, and she said, and you will help. And some of the other people that were with me started to cry, and they looked at me, and this one person that was running the event with us, she just said, I knew it. I just knew it's who you were. And as everybody entered the room, the shaman came in to start the ceremony, and she handed me the bowl of rose water, and she stood me up before her, and she looked at me to begin, and I began the ceremony, and once again, I knew this chant, and I knew these prayers, and I knew these blessings, and I knew the words, and I knew the order, and an entirely different ceremony, a different part of the country, with a different shaman, and there I was, just almost as a medium, as if the energies and prayers and blessings were flowing through me, and I could see where people had problems. I could see if it was a liver, the gallbladder, the heart, or something in their life, and I was able to heal them and cleanse them and release them and be part of the ceremony. And afterwards, we took people in their private rooms and we worked on them if they had something that really needed healing, and the two of us together were. And she would stop and be amazed that I was there. And they kept having to ask her to go back to working with the people because she was so dumbfounded that I had shown up. And I couldn't believe that I was here, and this is my life. This is what I know. This is what I've been trained for always. And I was blessed when I left there, and I had the opportunity to work with people that are working with the Ecuadorian government to give nature rights and to work with amazing, amazing organizations that are really making a difference there. And I had the opportunity to work in Peru the same way with Alex Rapido, the psychic surgeon who does healing with people who I've known for years, who Shirley MacLaine talks about in her books, and he can actually pierce the veil of energy and like put his hand inside your body, take out your organs, clean your organs, put them back in, and he's amazing. And so I had these incredible experiences, but when I came back to the United States, I was so lost and so confused. And I didn't know what it meant. What does that mean now to be recognized as a shaman in another country? And there were people there that were very mad. There were people that even were our guides that, you know, were so mean to me. And I said, what's going on? They're like, what, you're a shaman now? You're going to come take over our country? And I couldn't believe the anger and the animosity of my being there, because all I wanted to do was just to be light, just to be energy. And I came back here and nothing made sense to me. Nothing as far as supermarket lines and traffic and banks and
people, and there wasn't anything I could align and equate to, and just kept asking myself, if this is who I am, if this is what I'm supposed to be doing with my life, then what next? How do I help people? What next? And so, you know, I've really been on a journey to do that. And then I had the opportunity to be in Hawaii. And I was in Hawaii as Obama became president. I actually got to see the dolphins and the whales jump up and down and be so excited to, you know, bring in new energy and new life and to be in prayers. And then they had the kuhuna ceremonies. And as the kuhuna starts, he stopped his ceremony. And he turned around and he saw me there in the crowd. And he came over to me and he put his forehead on my forehead. And then he grabbed my hands and he brought me all the way to the front with him as he led the ceremony. And he recognized that I was him and he was I. And together we were the same spirit. And together we did the prayers and the blessings. And so here I am in yet another area and another part of the world. Now I'm in Hawaii, not Ecuador, not Peru, not in Oregon for the sacred healing ceremony, not in Mexico City. But yet, once again, the all of who I am is seen. And so where do I go with this and how do I go with this? So as I've created all these programs, and I have, you know, for me, I look at somebody's body like lights, just like Christmas lights. If you see lights and you see all the ones that are blinking and working and then you see the lights that are knotted, I can see the knots. I can see where somebody is knotted up and release that light. Or if I'm working with somebody who has had a heart attack or has had a stroke, they're just scared. People are terrified. And what I tell them, it's like a circuit breaker in a house. And if you have a circuit breaker, if the main power switch goes off, then all the other circuits go off. Your kitchen, you know, whatever that is. And so what I'm looking to do when I'm working with someone is to see what switch was shut off. And that the body, just like a circuit breaker in a house, switches a switch off so you don't have a gas leak or a flood. It's protecting the house. Your body does the same thing, and it shuts a circuit so you don't have a brain aneurysm. You don't have a blood clot, and the body will shut the circuit to protect you. Your body shuts circuits because it loves you, and it's protecting you, never to hurt you. And the minute you say to your body, thank you so much for loving me, thank you so much for protecting me, now I'm safe, now I can go back in and turn the circuit back on, you're going to be fine. And it's only when we're out of congruence with our body, when we're in fear, when we don't understand that we're one with all things, like when I'm horseback riding through bear country or walking through the rainforest with alligator at my feet, you know, it's when you realize that you are part of the one of the all things, then life opens up to you. And so people come to me all the time, and, you know, as we talk today about shamanic work and some of my Transform Your Body work, because as the show kicks off next week, then you'll really have the opportunity to hear me ask questions, but our guests will really be featured, and it's their lives that I really want to share with you. But I'm answering the questions today that so many of you have written in and asked me to talk about. And so if you do have further questions, please let me know, and I'm always happy to share. But today I really wanted to tell you what it's like just to follow the calling of your heart, and that if you're given a gift, trust that gift. Trust that there is information in you that you don't even know exists, that life is waiting to unfold in front of you, and the bell will ring and you will be called. Everybody that says, I don't know what my calling is, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, all these other people have a purpose, you have a purpose too. And your purpose will unfold like mine did right before your eyes, without even knowing that you had the training for it, the knowledge, the skill sets, the light, all of that just comes to play in that moment as you step into the right situation at the right time. The who you are shows up. The who you are, the knowingness, the light, the energy, the blueprint, the contract of you coming to this planet shows up. And so, you know, I've been blessed. I was given a gift to be able to see, to be able to heal, to be able to help people, show them the unlimited potential of their body and go from, you know, being the bridge from the physical to the spiritual world. How do you get from there and how do you get back and how do you transfer message and knowledge and how do you live a spiritual life in a human body and take that body with you on this incredible journey? And so those are the things I work with people on, and I love to work with people on. I love to answer questions on. And then I'm just going to give you a couple tools to find yourself, because so many times people are like, but how do I know? What's the right exercise? What's the right diet? And your body will tell you what it needs. And so I'm going to ask you to grab a pen and paper and just write down some of these things I'm asking. And this is a blueprint for you in your own life. It's part of my Transform Your Body, Transform Your Life program. It's one of the ways I teach and unfold things for you. But one of the things that I'm looking for way back when you were a baby is, if you remember the color, if you had a nursery or a room that you were in, if you could remember what the color of the room is, if it was blue, if it was pink, if it was green, doesn't matter what the color is. Just interested if you remember. And if you don't remember the color, you never saw a picture of your nursery or you as a baby or whatever, make it up. If you had a nursery, what color do you think your nursery would be? And then let me know if it had hard floors or if you had carpet. And that's going to be really interesting, because that's going to be how people came in to see you, what you heard as people walked in, whether there was a presence or whether there was a softness of people approaching you. I'm interested if you had drapes or blinds, how the light came into your room, how you witnessed and experienced light, if it was in slivers, if it was through shades, if you had open windows, and then if you had, you know, any Disney figures, dolls, whatever, trains, things, you know, if your room was a theme, I'd be interested in that too. The next thing I want to know is your very first motions. I'm interested if you had like a little rocking horse, you had a little bouncy thing that taught you how to walk, your motions, if you were swinging, if you were bouncing, all of that. And then I want to know, as you were a baby, if you had a bicycle, and if you did have a bicycle, I want to know, did you ride that bicycle, and if you did, why? I want to know if you rode that bicycle to get you to school, if it was a means of transportation, if you rode that bike because you had really bad house and people were hurting you in your house or an angry house and that was how you got away, that was your escape on that bicycle. Or did you ride your bicycle because your friends rode a bike and that's why you rode? And so is motion associated with what other people do? Is motion your escape? Is motion your form of transportation, or is motion just something you enjoy? And so I'm really interested in that. And were you allowed to cross streets with the bike, stuff like that? Or were you allowed to get to where you wanted to go with your bike, or were you only allowed to ride in your yard? So I'm interested in those things, what physical messages were given to you at that time. I'm really interested if you played sports when you were a child. And if you did, if they were team sports or individual sports. Like for me, I'm a gymnast, I'm a dancer, I'm a swimmer, I'm a figure skater. They're all individual sports. So I'm interested if you did individual sports or if you played group sports or both. And if you did play group sports, I'm interested, were you the captain of the football team, who you played, or were you always benched? It's really interesting when I work with people that were benched a lot when they were in Little League. And now these are the same guys that show up at the gym and they talk to everybody, but they don't really work out, because exercising to them is really just socializing. It's really not about participating in the sports. It's amazing what information our body carries. So I would be interested in that. I would be interested in anything that you did, that if you had a swing set, if you had a seesaw. I was working with someone who was at a millionaires to billionaires conference. And they had a seesaw in their backyard. And he had a really mean brother. And every time that he was on the top, that his brother would get off and he'd come crashing down to the ground. And then he'd cry, and then his brother would say, I'm not going to do it anymore. And a couple months later, his brother would get up and, you know, go up and down and up and down and up and down. And then finally, you know, his brother would say he would feel really safe, and his brother would jump off again, and he'd come crashing down again. And this was a man that grew up to make millions, lose millions. Every time he got to the very pinnacle and the very top of success, he came crashing down. That was associated with his physical memory. Every time he felt safe and on top, he set himself up to come crashing down. I have another client that I worked with who was from Canada, and they used to have sports where they would have to run and do hurdles and do all this stuff, and he was not a great athlete. But they had one area where he would hold on to the chin-up bar, and he could hold on longer than any other kid. And not only could he hold on longer than any other kid, but even when the test was over, he was still hanging on and people were yelling his name. So in his mind, he was good at hanging on. He held on to a business relationship where people were stealing money from him. He held on to a marriage that didn't work. The minute he got his brain that he was good at hanging on and was able to let go, now he's in a beautiful marriage and relationship. Now he's made millions of dollars. I mean, he's businesses that he's always dreamed and envisioned of doing, but he couldn't do it before because the memory that was stuck in him was that he was good at holding on, and he didn't know what else he was good at. And so he held on to be able to preserve that message. So those are the things I'm really interested in connecting you with. So here we have a call. Hold on a second. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Nicole. How are you?
How are you? I'm great. How about yourself?
Oh, good. That was an amazing story. Very, very good story. Very captivating. So now I have some questions about these questions you were just asking.
Yes,
you know
absolutely.
What I mean? Okay, so, you know, like, some of us don't have a great recollection of our childhood. And, you know, so as far as, you know, I would have very little recollection of much. And, like, I certainly couldn't tell you what color my nursery was, if I even had a nursery.
and that's fine. That's great. It's just when I ask the question, it's like when I say peanut butter and you say jelly, I'm only interested in the first thing that comes to your mind.
Oh, so it's
doesn't
not what
have
really
to be
was.
Right.
Oh,
it, right.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be right, and it doesn't have to be what really was, but it's what your body automatically goes to. So if I say, your baby, do you have hardwood floors or carpet, and you say carpet, you automatically have a different association with the way people approach you that someone else that hears clank, clank, whatever that is.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm interested in the vibration, physically what you hear and what you take in. So it doesn't have to be the right thing. You know, it's interesting because one of the things that I ask is, if you were a doll, what kind of doll would you be? You know, like for me, I'd be like super, what, like I'd be like, you know, the Princess Warrior. I'd be like Wonder Woman, you know, but Barbie had Ken and a singing career and a Corvette, you know. It's like, you know, and other people would be rag dolls, you know, or whatever that is, and they'd be taken everywhere. So it doesn't, you know, have to be true. It's just, if I said to you, Chris, if you were a doll or a toy, what kind of doll would you be?
Well, I would answer, I'd be like that blow up clown that you kept punching and it pop right back up.
That's the Weeble, right? The Weeble, they wobble, but they don't fall down. I remember those. No, Weebles are great. But see, that automatically would tell me something about you. And that would say, and since I had the opportunity to hear some of your life, you know, shared on the Curious Time Show, then I would know that's really what happened to you.
Right.
You really were knocked down and you popped back up. And I mean, and that has been your strength. And so that very much tells me who you are as a physical being and as a spiritual being.
Right.
And then as somebody working with you, I can do a lot with that because then I can say, okay, so this is the patterning. This is, and one of the things when I go through this with people, it's really interesting. People don't even realize that if they always wore team uniforms, like if they always had their varsity jackets on or they were in their soccer uniforms or little girls in tutus or Batman pajamas or whatever that is, and what they wore was really important as a kid. It's super important that they dress for success. Like what they wear in order to be able to close a deal, what they wear and is like very important. Where someone else, it matters not at all. If you always have like trophies and you always like had trophies and certificates and ribbons all over your room, it's important that you're salesman of the month. It's important that like if recognition was important to you when you were 11, it's still important to you. And if your certificates were stuffed in the drawer, it doesn't matter. But it's like those things, it could be someone that's now a Ford dealer, you know, somebody working at Ford, and the fact that they don't get certificates that say they're the salesman of the month, they don't do as well as if somebody recognized them. And it's, I mean, sometimes it's day and night. You know, what is the best time of day for you? If you love being outdoors and all of your meetings are in a saloon, you know, you're not going to close your deals. So it's like, and it's amazing when I work with people. I think I had shared that one of my clients that I worked with, he's a film editor. And he is a mushroom. He sits in a dark room all day long, you know. And he was very overweight, and he was very sick. And not only was he overweight and sick, but people kept trying to help him. You know, they didn't want him to die. They'd give him green drinks, and they, like, try to get him on exercise programs. And they'd say, you know, hey, you know, our studio, we have a volleyball game on Saturdays, and you should come play with us and come out, and it'll be so much fun. And nothing in him would ever, ever play volleyball on a Saturday afternoon on the beach. He doesn't like light and he doesn't like people. He's a film editor.
Right.
Light and people, not his thing. His diet is potato chips and Coke. Green drinks, not good. So he is from, I know, the center of the earth. He's from another world, the center of the earth, so light is not necessary for him. You know, there's a different diet that's necessary for someone that is from the energy field. And so for him, the very first thing I did was I took him on an archaeological dig in caves. Oh, my God. He was so happy because they were dark caves with hieroglyphic images. Mm-hmm. And he was moving faster through the cave than anybody ever saw because he couldn't wait to see the next thing. Right. And then I took him on a scuba dive, and he was under, you know, he's in darkness under the water looking at light and visual images. The guy lost so much weight so quickly. It was like his whole body changed and his life changed. But you have to know who someone is in order to help them. In order to get someone unknotted, you have to say, okay, you know, what's going on? I have somebody that I was working with, and she was from Minneapolis, and she was going to have the lap band for Christmas. She was so overweight. She was 100 pounds overweight or something. And so somebody sent her to me, and I said, please don't do the lap band. They said, give me 3 sessions with you. I only thought I needed one, but I thought, I don't know her. I'll say 3. So I was like, 3 sessions. And when I went through her patterning, she was saying how her friends wanted her to go to curves with them, that they wanted her to walk through the neighborhood, and like nothing in her wanted to do that. She can't get off the couch, that she used to be so beautiful that before her kids, and she said that, you know, but going through her life, she was the valedictorian. She was the head of the French club. She was the head of the student body. She was the president, you know, of one of the clubs. She was the captain of the soccer team in junior high. She's a leader. Nothing in her was going to follow her friends to curves. Nothing.
Right.
So the minute I found in Minneapolis an organization that was like an athletic organization that every day they have volleyball, horseback riding, bowling, whatever. And if you lead an event, it's free. So we had her lead a walk around the neighborhood. It was like a little hike or whatever. And all she had to do was hold a clipboard and tick off people's names. She lost 30 pounds in 1 month. And now she is doing great. 30 pounds in 1 month because she's a leader. She couldn't follow anybody. But the minute she kicked back into leadership, her body went, oh, I remember this. I know what this feels like.
That's amazing.
So it's like I have... Yeah, so it's, I mean, so it's just working with one of the guys I have right now who's big, big president of a corporation, and he's always like, I can't work out, I don't have time to go to the gym, I actually hate the gym, I hate pumping weight, I hate doing this, I'm always in hotels, I'm always in restaurants, I'm always eating food, I've got 3 boys, we eat crap, like whatever it is, all the reasons why he's unhealthy, and, you know, but yet he's calling me to work with him, but in talking to him, he's a strategist, he's bought and sold all these companies, he used to be a chess champion, did all this stuff, so I said to him, if you're going to work with me, I'm going to send you somewhere, and then you have to give it 3 weeks,
And at the end of the 3 weeks, it's like, if you hate it, we'll think of something else, but I think you're going to love it. Your whole body and your whole life is going to change. She's like, no, I trust you, whatever. And so I said, I'm going to give you an address, and Monday show up there, and then call me and let me know how it goes. So he calls me up. He said, Nicole. I said, yes. He said, I'm fencing? I was like, yes. He goes, oh, my God, I'm fencing. I was like, yes, because he's a strategist. He's a
right.
chess player. The minute he started fencing and his mind was doing what it does and his body followed, his body went, wow, this is so great. He won a championship.
Right.
So it's like, you know, so you just have to say, okay, who is this person and where did they get tripped up? Where did the knots, like I said, like Christmas lights, where did those knots happen? And how do we unknot the knot? So your body, your life, everything is in flow. Everything works.
Huh. Very cool. Very cool. I mean, it makes sense. What boggles my mind, though, is that the woman with the whip, with the clipboard, she could do the same amount of walking without the clipboard and without being the leader and not get nowhere. But
that's
if
correct.
She's the one in
right.
charge of it, then... So there's, like, that's interesting to me. You know what I mean? Because we've been taught that, you know, movement burns calories. Burning calories helps lose weight. If you burn more calories than you take in. And so to me, I'm thinking, wow, like, so if, let's say 10 laps around a track, you know what I mean? Like, so really what I'm getting from you is that if she did those 10 laps around the track as a follower, it would have no effect on her.
That is
but
correct.
But she does the 10 laps as the leader, and she gets all of the benefits of it. That's interesting.
That's correct.
Because
it's not that she would get no benefits.
In the case of her being a leader,
In the case of her being a leader,
she's bought into it. Like she's like there's something in her brain then that's, she's willing to be there and do that, whereas when you're following, often you're not, unless you're a follower, right? I mean, if you're a follower and you're happy to follow, then the reverse would be the case, right? If somebody forced you
Absolutely.
To lead it. Yeah, interesting.
You know, like, I just want to be clear, it's not that you would get no benefit from walking, because any
right.
time that we actually, you know, do anything and our body's oxygenized, but there's a benefit, but certainly you're not going to have the results. She lost 30 pounds in 1 month because her body was in alignment with who she is. You know, and it's the same as food. It's the same as thinking when you're in alignment with what you do, with your joy. I was at dinner just recently, and there was a woman sitting next to me, and she said, oh, I was listening to your program, and I'm really curious, you know, what you would suggest for me. And I said to her, people are knives, or they're forks, or they're spoons. And I grabbed a silverware off the table, and I said, see this? I said, this is a knife body, and a knife body straight up and down, and the knife body climbs, and, and I was telling her all the different things that a knife body does. And I said, and then you have your spoon body, and I grabbed the spoon. I said, spoon bodies have strong legs. They're your runners. They're your jumpers, you know. I said, and then you have a fork body like me, and I picked it up and it fell right over. I said, really flexible. I said, the first thing you want to know is if you're a knife, a fork, or a spoon. Because you want to do things your body really enjoys. So she's like, well, what am I? I said, well, you're a spoon. And she goes, how do you know that? I said, just looking at you and the way that you walk, I could tell that you use your legs to walk or whatever, just even coming over to the table. And then she was like, exercise, which is so funny. I go through it all the time. How can you help me? Because I hate exercise and I hate this and I hate to do that. And then she said, well, how do you find the right exercise for someone? And she lives in Colorado. She lives in Aspen. And I said, you know, it's always really easy for me because I look at the person. And I said, tell me about your life, what you do. You know, so I wasn't asking her about her fitness. I wasn't saying, do you go to the gym? Do you eat, you know, marshmallows
right.
and Häagen-Dazs or whatever? I was just asking her about her lifestyle, what she does, what she enjoys, what the things she does. And what she was telling me was she has created all these companies, and she would create a company from a seed. And like a seed is, you know, like a lot, like bamboo shoots. I don't know if you know anything about a bamboo seed, but you put a bamboo seed in the ground, and I think it's something crazy. It's like 7 or 9 years before the bamboo seed actually breaks ground. But once it does, the bamboo
it just goes
like,
kaboom.
Yeah, it just goes, right, that's it. And then you can't write. But it's like somebody has to diligently
grow that seed, you know, water the seed and say, I know there's a bamboo plant in there.
Right.
And so she was talking about like that, that she has all this patience to keep things going, even though it seems like nothing is happening. And then all of a sudden, there's all this power and all this, you know, and motion, and then she'll sell the company for, you know, all this money and go ahead and buy a new company and do the same thing.
Wow.
And then finally she's like, okay, so, you know, what exercise am I going to be doing? And I said, water polo. And she said, what? And I said, water polo. She goes, that's crazy. That's crazy. She said, do you know that I've wanted to play water polo since I was like six? She said, do you know, uh-huh. Nicole, I could tread water for hours. I said, right, strong legs. That she can hang there until the power happens,
right.
Until that motion, until the kaboom, that she can hang and do that and tread water. And she's like, oh, my God, I'm going to go back tomorrow and find a place. I can't believe you said that. But it's like,
wow, that's amazing.
You know, but sometimes you just, yes.
I was just going to say, I think you have a caller with their hand up.
Oh, okay. I do. Okay, let me jump in there. Thank you so much. Do you have another question, Chris? Is there something else you want to ask about?
I was, you know, because I was trying to go along and answer those questions and you know, but I was like, I must have misunderstood is all. So yeah, I was like, what about if we don't know the answer to something,
yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
It's really easy. So you just want to create whatever is your first instinct. It's the first instinct, because if you said carpet, you really want people to approach you. Like whenever my dad would punish me as a child, my dad would always say, you know that I love you. And I'd say yes, and then Kim, whatever I did wrong, you suck your finger in the sock, get me up to punish you till you're 30. You know, but it would start with, you know that I love you. And so I want to be approached in a soft way.
Right.
And it's like, and something as simple as if you had carpet or floor will tell me that about you.
Yeah, but if I
even
had,
in your mind,
see, I like
the way
to
that
be
you,
approached in a soft way too, but I didn't have carpet. You know what I mean? Like, so that's
but
where
it,
I'm.
Even if you, but whatever your first instinct is, and if you said hardwood floors,
yeah.
If you did have hardwood floors, okay. And you knew you had hardwood floors and you'd like to be approached in a soft way, I would still know that if I asked you about the light or I asked you about the drape, or there would be something in your answer that
okay.
I would know that that's the way that you would want to be approached.
Okay.
And so it's in that combination. And so I'll do a formula. We'll do one of the shows where I'll do a formula and I'll actually help people be able to find for themselves like the right exercise, the right food, all of
right.
that. So you don't mm-hmm. need me, so you can do it yourself. And I'm happy to come on and teach people that formula. But
yeah.
in the meantime, if someone's listening and they want to send it to me, just send it to Nicole at NicoleBrandonWorldwide.com. Tell me what your answers were and I'll help you out. I'm happy to do that. So.
Okay. All right, let me get out of the way so you can get your caller.
All right. Thanks so much, Chris.
All right. Thanks, Nicole.
Of course. Hi, Carrie. Welcome to Unlimited Life. Hi.
Carrie, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me?
No,
okay.
There's a problem.
Sorry.
Okay, there you are.
Sorry, it's the headset.
That's okay.
We can breathe. Okay. No, the headset's given me problems before, so it's doing it again. I wanted to ask you, you must be 100% psychic because carpet and floors were my question.
Well,
it's a
great question, and it's really interesting, you know, when I ask people if they were, you know, if they liked day or night, or even if you were on the cover of a magazine.
Yeah.
What magazine would you be on the cover of, and what would you be on the magazine for? And you know, there are certain questions I could ask that I can unfold someone's life so easily. And so when we asked you those questions, what was your answer? Do you remember the color of your nursery?
I vaguely remember as a child a purple color.
Uh-huh. Okay, and do you remember if you had hardwood floors or carpet?
We had hardwood floors, but like glazed. So they were varnished. Mm-hmm. That was the word I was looking for. Oh, my brain is asleep.
And now in your own home, do you have floors or carpets? What did you choose?
Oh, I'm still in the same place. I'm not that old.
Oh, no, that's good. That's fine. So that actually helps a lot on the way that you walk, on the way that you move, and what you know, all of that, and what your emotion is like.
Yeah.
You know, that's very different than somebody that ran barefoot in the grass their whole life. You know, so what you felt is very, very different into that feeling and that motion of your body. And so you would, if I was working with you, I would be able to give you sounds that I wouldn't be able to give other people, because you would understand sounds in a different way.
Sound, okay, sound.
That's really, really brilliant. And do you right now, are you looking for right exercise or diet? Are you happy with your body? Are you looking to shift or change something, even in your health?
Oh, my word. My diet has actually shifted so much this year. It's floored me. Excuse the pun.
Perfect.
It's shifted so much. I mean, my entire diet has changed. I cannot eat what I ate last year. I can't even eat a full plate of food. I will just feel ill. So everything is changing. Everything is changing. Everything is changing.
Well, it sounds like you're vibrating at a much higher level now, which is really quite nice. That really sounds,
yeah,
I mean, that's what
weird.
Happens when you're vibrating at a higher level. What happens is, and this is a really good lesson for everybody that's listening, so I'm so glad that you called in and said that. We used to believe in a past, a present, and a future.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a very linear timeline in our understanding of energy, which is why in reincarnation, like, you could hurt me, and then we could come back 200 years later and work it out. But this particular life, so many people have asked to become enlightened. And if you watch a top spin, the faster a top spins, it becomes pure light. Yes, you see light when you watch a top spin. So if you are giving to me, and I'm receiving, and I give, and we constantly have this cycle where I'm giving to you, you give to me, I give to you, you give to me, I share with you, you share with me. The faster that goes, we, like the top, become light beings. Well, that really messes us up in that past, present, future thing. So that means that if you hurt me, right, if you hurt me in this world, we're calling it enlightened life, we don't come back 200 years from now to work it out, because at the end of this life, you're going to be enlightened. So you hurt me, and I go, and you say, sorry, what did I say? And in the minute we fix it, and we get that little aha bubble, like the cartoons that we learned in that moment, we go, aha. And in that aha, our vibration jumps up. So we now, that aha jumps us up. So instead of reincarnating, we incarnate, which means in this life, we learn in this life, grow in this life, engage in this life, expand in this life. So what happens is you get enough of those little aha bubbles and you keep incarnating, then all of a sudden, you're not who you were 3 years ago. So you can say, my gosh, I used to love strawberry ice cream. I hate strawberry ice cream now. Who bought that dress? I can't believe I ever bought that outfit. Who was that person? It's because now, right, now we're incarnating and we're vibrating higher and quicker and quicker. So your diet will change and your body will change as you're on that higher vibrational path, which I think is great. I wish you were here, not South Africa. Gosh, I'd love to meet you.
Oh, maybe one day I'll come over there. I'll let you know.
I would love that. Absolutely. I would love that. But so that's how it happens, and it's wondrous.
Okay. So. Wow. It's been incredible. It's a journey. I think I better write a book about it.
Yes, but please, you know, contact me, you know, reach out to me, because I'm happy to help you. It's a journey I'm very well versed on, especially at the level you're at, you know, and I'm happy to help you, you know, because there's so many more levels above the ceiling and I'm happy to help you. I feel like the spiritual janitor. I have all the keys to all the doors.
Oh, cool. That's perfect.
So just reach out to me. So.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling in today. My pleasure. Right. Thank you. Thank you so much, and take care. And Chris, thank you so much for calling in. And so for anybody, I will do a show teaching you the secret formula, but if you have any questions, please call me at Nicole and NicoleBrandonWorldwide.com. Contact me. I'm happy to help you do your own blueprint, get to the next stage. It's really just such a magical gift. And stay tuned for Peter Padgett on UFOs, John Paul Forrestal on. He's our walking Wikipedia, Nick Bear, our soul whisperer, Alan Robinson, our stuntman, Ben Newman, our millionaire mentor, Brooks Cole, New Technology, and Haston Feng Shui, and Ian Wynn from the Superhuman Project. So I wish you all a wonderful week. This is Nicole Brandon from Unlimited Life, from the shamanic world and the spirit world, from my heart and from this place to yours. I wish you all a wonderful week.